Hi guys, just a reminder that this podcast, as well as many of my online resources, is delivered freely. If you would like to help me get this message of healing out to millions of people around the world, please consider clicking on the donate button on my website, thecureforchronicpain.com. Thank you. Hello, my people. Happy podcast day. This is Nicole, and you have reached my podcast, The Cure for Chronic Pain. Welcome to it. Happy to have you here. Oh boy, what can I tell you? What can I tell you on this crazy day? Summer in my house is a crazy space. Even amidst coronavirus, having five children and having them want to be outside and all over the place and in five different directions makes it very inconvenient to work and to have a podcast. So forgive me if somebody runs in here screaming for my attention, which really legitimately might happen. But finally, I had to sit down and close my door and say, I need to record my podcast because summer feels like bizarro world for me. It's very difficult to get things done. So thank you for being patient, should that happen. Could actually be sort of entertaining and interesting if it does. So let's just wait and see. Anyway, I hope today finds you well. I hope it's a good day. Oh, I have a lot on my mind. The first thing I want to say is that I am so excited to see how many of you guys are signing up for my online retreat. It is breaking my heart that I can't be at Omega this summer. It's actually getting a bit more painful as the weeks go on because it's really sinking in. I was just talking to Lisa Schlossberg about this the other day. One of my guest instructors at Omega would have been our third summer there together. And we were just saying how sad we were that it's just so great to be in the room and connecting with all of you guys. But I have to say, even though that remains completely true, the online retreat we had at the beginning of June was incredible and life-changing, and the reviews, thank you guys, are rolling in, and I'm sharing more and more of them on our Journal Speak page and in my newsletter, but it was great. It was really better than I expected in terms of really being able to connect virtually, and I'm super excited to plan the next one. So if you want to work with me personally, I get a lot of emails asking to work with me personally. This is the way. If you want to work with me personally, my retreat is the way to do it because I unfortunately do not have time to do individual sessions anymore. And this is a real way for me to work intimately with you guys. So head over to thecureforchronicpain.com. There's a link to sign up on the homepage. And then, of course, there's the retreats tab that tells you all about it, bios for all my guest instructors. And even if you did attend the first one, it's going to be new lessons and it's really going to be special. So I'm excited to see the signups coming in, and I invite any of you who are struggling with this process or need a little bit more support or want a little of my special attention to join us. It's September 18th. I should mention that. September 18th to the 21st will be our next virtual retreat. Okay. Other than that, what else do I have to tell you? I'm doing well. I'm doing great, actually. I have to tell you, I'm doing pretty great. And the reason I'm doing great is the reason that I spend so much of my energy carrying this message to you, because this work is a gift that keeps on giving. Getting out of chronic pain is the biggest, littlest part. I know. If you're sitting there and you're in desperate pain, you're like, Nicole, it's not the biggest, littlest part. It's the every part. But it's really, once you move past that, and I will tell you, I hear this from every single person who I interact with around this work. It began from pain and symptoms and syndromes and needing to be free of it, and it has blossomed into this just completely intimate and beautiful relationship with oneself. And honestly, that's why I'm great, because I keep relentlessly connecting with myself, even when it's hard, even when it's exhausting. And I get to have these moments of real awakening, really beautiful experience. So I'll share this with you. Lately, I've been riding my bike. So I'm one of these people that when something starts feeling good and fun for me, I get rather obsessed. I'm just going to admit it. I get obsessed and I really enjoy it. So we have this beautiful bike trail near me and I'm riding my bike, you know, somewhere between 20 and 30 miles every day. And of course, you know, I have a severe abnormal spinal condition, so that should hurt me, but it is not. I have no back pain. But one thing that has been interesting ever since I started bicycling every day, or we might say cycling if we were fancy, is that I was getting this strange pain in my right knee. And it wasn't any sort of knee, first of all, I've never had knee pain, but it wasn't any sort of knee pain that I've ever even conceived of before, because it wasn't in the joint of my knee. It was like this weird sort of quarter-sized, if you picture like a circle, on my kneecap, and it would just ache, almost like as if I had a black and blue feeling on the front of my knee, but I didn't bang it. I hadn't banged it. And so I just took it in. I found it interesting, as I do. I thought, why is this happening? This is interesting. What's going on? And so it was painful. It was bothering me every time I rode my bike. And so little by little, I started to inquire into it. You know, I treated it the way I always tell you guys to treat your pain, which is with sort of a benign indifference. Sort of, yeah, you know, I see you. I know you're there. I'm here for you if you want to talk to me, but I'm not scared of you. And I know you'll go when you're ready. But I started inquiring into it a little bit, saying, you know, hey, what's going on? And I really got some interesting information. And the most interesting information I got is my body, my mind, my brain, my mind-body dance system does not like it when I get passionate about new things. And I realized why in my journal speak, which is that I'm such a perfectionist and I'm so quick to shame myself for not being the best at something, that I get a lot of fear when I start getting involved in a new thing, because I will be so tempted to tell myself what a crappy job I'm doing at it, and I have to be better, and I can't enjoy it unless I'm doing it faster or better or different or superior to yesterday. And that's old thinking, and that doesn't serve me anymore, but it doesn't mean it doesn't keep coming up. And so my pain was saying to me, you know, if you just say you have a bad knee right now, if you can just accept that you shouldn't be cycling, you have a bad knee, obviously, the pain is getting worse each day, and it's probably best idea if you quit this before you realize what a disgusting failure you are, because you can't do it as fast as you'd like or as often as you'd like or as many miles as you think you should every day. And I just sat with that so gently, so lovingly, actually, you know. God, that's so interesting how protective I am of myself, how protective my brain and my nervous system are of the shame that I might feel with my typical personality. Because my personality, which, you know, you never get totally out from under your personality. My personality is really self-critical and really perfectionistic and really shaming. It just is. I don't like it, but that's the first place I go. And then, of course, I have to press my pause button. And I have to readjust my thinking. But if I don't, that's where I go. And so my brain and my nervous system perceived trying something new, like biking 30 miles, as something that was far too dangerous for what I might do to myself, how it might make me feel about myself. And so I said, no, I see you. I see you and I hear you and I get it, that you have really good reason to think that it's going to hurt me worse to be with myself and how it feels to try something new. But I got this, and I'm okay, and I don't need to be protected from my own natural self-criticizing tendencies. I can handle myself. I can be with those very difficult, uncomfortable feelings, and I can sit with them until they're ready to leave, until they realize they have been seen and heard. And that's all it took. I haven't felt the knee pain since. And I'm going to tell you guys, I am loving being out in the beautiful nature and on the really hot days. I get up early and I get out there and I bike in the morning before the sun really comes all the way up. And it's just absolutely beautiful. And I'm with nature and I'm feeling the air and the sun and smelling the flowers. And it's freaking great. And imagine if I decided I had a bad knee and went for an MRI and they found some incidental finding, because God knows what my knees look like in there. I mean, I'm 48. I've been doing active things my whole life. Maybe I have some arthritis in there. Maybe I got some bone-on-bone action. I don't know. We are all shaped differently on the inside, and we all look differently as we age. Dr. Sarno used to call it normal abnormalities, and it's true. So who knows what my MRI would look like, and who knows what kind of meaning I could have made of that, and how it could have limited me, and how the pain could have spread from my knee to my shin splint to my ankle. This is what happens to people all the time. And you guys, there's nothing wrong with your knee. It is a very natural, normal response from your brain and your nervous system trying to protect you from the awful, agonizing pain of your own personality and your own feelings about things. You don't need protection, and neither do I. So that is what has been going on with me. And honestly, it's such a great way to be alive. It's such an awake, alert, aware, and enlightened way to live. And I'm grateful for it, tremendously grateful for it. And I'm loving my exercise and my biking and the way it makes me feel about myself. And, you know, I don't look so bad in a bathing suit. And it's summer and I live at the beach, so that's kind of important for me. So anyway, it's all good. It's great. And I'm really always grateful to be able to share my experience with you, because I know it will help someone to know that I go through this too. This is the way I handle it. I sit with the feelings. I sit with the curiosity and the openness, and it passes. So if this is your first exposure to my work, if you're new, just hop on over to thecureforchronicpain.com. Follow me on Instagram at Nicole Sachs, LCSW, because that is the place that I am pouring out new content every day, all the time. I have a new IGTV series called I Am Evidence, talking about stuff like that story all the time, ways that this manifests in my life, and I use myself as a real live science experiment for you guys, and of course, my podcast, which you're listening to, but many, many back episodes of, I think we're on episode 87. So many, many people with different experiences who are totally well. And then, of course, my Real Time Heal series, where I do in the moment, unplanned, unscripted therapy sessions with people who are seeking to heal, and more of those coming up as well. So today we are going to talk about something super important, which is the need for self-compassion that begins with so many self-limiting beliefs that we have. I think about self-limiting beliefs a lot because I think about the way in which we unconsciously walk through life with statements running through our minds that are so unconscious, we don't even register them. It becomes our underlying programming. Self-limiting beliefs, by definition, are things that you think about yourself, whether consciously or unconsciously, that are keeping you stuck. Because you don't spend the time pressing your pause button and challenging them. So I got a list of self-limiting beliefs together, and I'm just going to read you a bunch of them because I think that they'll give you an idea maybe to connect with one of these or several of these in yourself that might be keeping you stuck. And then we'll talk about why it is super key to have self-compassion for yourself, because without self-compassion, you will continue to shame yourself for having these beliefs and stay stuck in them. And that's an endless cycle I don't want for you. So I'm going to read some. So here are some self-limiting beliefs. I'm too old. I'm too young. I'm too poor. I lack money and resources. I'm too fat or too skinny, too tall or too short. I'm not smart enough. I'm not popular enough. I'm not connected enough. Others are in my way. I can't start. I'm not ready. Rich people hold all the good cards. I'm a mess. It's hopeless. I don't have enough time. I'm too far gone to start taking care of my body now. I don't have enough energy. I expect others to hurt me. Here's a big one. One day I'll change. Getting my hopes up always leads to disappointment. My health is holding me back. I'll never be happy. My plate is too full already. Change is too hard. And that's just a sampling. That's just a few. There are so many self-limiting beliefs that I've identified over the years that people are just carrying around with them. Like the heaviest backpack, like a winter coat on a 90-degree day, they're just walking around with them. And the problem with these self-limiting beliefs, like I said, is oftentimes you're not even consciously thinking about it. You know, there's one self-limiting belief. People won't like the real me. People won't like the real me. Like walking around constantly, smiling when you're not happy, being convenient for other people so that they are more comfortable with the way you are, and having to bank all those feelings of resentment and sadness and shame that if you were showing up as the real you, you wouldn't be accepted. And the thing is, these beliefs over the years become so ingrained in us that not showing up as the real us becomes the normal, the natural, the constant mask we wear. I remember this so well from high school. I moved a lot as a kid, and I remember once somebody asking me, I don't know how I felt about something or what I wanted in a situation. And I remember literally saying to them, "What do you need me to be and I'll be it." And, you know, no wonder my back went out when I was 19 and I had a horrible pain incident, because it had just reached critical mass. I couldn't function like that anymore. And neither can you, neither should you have to. And so there's so many of those self-limiting beliefs. And like I said, that's just a sampling. And it's really, really important to identify our self-limiting beliefs. So what I want to suggest to you guys is you take some time today, maybe after you're done listening to this podcast or at some time later on, and take an inventory. Make a list of your self-limiting beliefs, the ones that you think you're carrying around as a result of maybe childhood experiences, or the way maybe you had a mismatch with the personality of your parent, kind of like when I was talking to Clara in the most recent Real Time Heal. And even though her mom tried her best and was really kind to her, it was so clear to Clara from a young age that her mom didn't suffer the way she suffered. And in that, Clara was certain, in that kind of way that we're certain as young children, we don't even really know what's going on. She was certain that she would never really be understood, that she was alone. And so a lot of times our self-limiting beliefs are born there in childhood, and maybe we're just too sensitive for our parents, or too aware, or too emotional. And that's really inconvenient for parents, and they shut us down. So many people that suffer from TMS are very, very sentient, feeling, deeply thinking and caring beings. And having a kid like that, for certain parents, certain personality types, is something they cannot handle. And so oftentimes our self-limiting beliefs are born there. I'm not lovable. I'm not worthy. I can't show up as I am. People won't accept the real me. And so as adults, now that we have logic and now that we have some space between that powerlessness of childhood and now, we have to take inventory of what might be holding us back. And so we can press the pause button and reevaluate some of those things that, I swear to God, I bet if you try this exercise, you're going to come up with things that you didn't even realize that you're thinking that's playing in the background. You know, we all use computers, we all use phones. Do you know how many, probably millions of things in these devices are playing in the background for us to get that one image or that one function that we think is the only thing that we need to do? I mean, it's mind-boggling. None of us could possibly understand it. Maybe one of you guys out there understands it. I certainly do not. So that's happening in our brains and our nervous systems all the time, with our own self-limiting beliefs. They're playing in the background, noiselessly. We don't know constantly that they're happening. But if you have this belief in the background, no one will like the real me. People won't accept the real me. I'm unlovable. I'm unacceptable as I am. You just act, act, act. I know you guys can feel this as I'm saying it. You walk into work and people expect you to smile and you just put on that smile and walk through your day. And God knows how many emotions you're banking by doing that. And when I say banking, I mean they're going into your reservoir of rage and shame and sadness and grief and terror and fear. And they're building up, and they need to be expressed somewhere. So if they're not expressed in our journal speak practice, they have to scream somewhere, and they're screaming through our stomachs and our heads and our nerves and our skin and our backs and our hips and our knees and our shoulders, and they're screaming for our attention. Self-limiting beliefs are everywhere. I mean, they pervade every part of our lives. You know, I don't deserve nice things. There's no point in dreaming big. Others' approval is key to my feeling worthy. You know, so many childhoods inform those kind of thinking, those things. You know, when someone else changes, I'll be happy. Like all these codependent thoughts. And I got to tell you, throughout my lifetime, I've had a lot of codependent thoughts because I grew up with a dad who, I mean, I can call him an alcoholic. He never called himself an alcoholic. But you know, he was a daily drinker. I don't think I ever saw a day where he wasn't drinking several beers and probably more. So I grew up with someone who was volatile and who was unpredictable, and I didn't know how he was going to show up. And so I became super codependent. Like, I can't be comfortable unless everyone in the room is comfortable because, and this was a self-limiting belief that I didn't even know I was having at the time, but my self-limiting belief is, I'm not safe in a room with people who are unhappy. Because when my dad was unhappy, that spotlight got shined directly on me, and it became how I needed to be to calm him down and to make him happy, or else I was going to have to hear it or be judged or be demanded upon. And, you know, that's just my story. And I'll tell you, for a really long time, that story played out for me in ways that caused a lot of TMS, because if I decide that I'm only safe if everybody else in the room is happy, first of all, I don't know how anybody else feels because I'm not asking them. So it's my perception of whether other people are happy, which is a really dangerous space to occupy because I could project all sorts of things on other people that they're not even necessarily feeling. And so that one was really important for me to be aware of and to unmask and to really look at and to look at that belief. Because here's the thing, I can be safe in a room where people are unhappy, and I better be. Because if I have to make every single person in my life happy for me to have a good day, good luck to me. I have children, for God's sakes. You can't make everybody happy all the time. And even if you do everything to make people happy, guys, sometimes they're just not. And that's their journey. That's their right to have their feelings. And so when I finally, it took me a long while, was able to look at that self-limiting belief that I needed other people to be happy for me to be safe, I realized that does not serve me anymore. That is fueled by old stories and old thinking that are no longer true for me. All I have to do, and you guys hear me talk about this constantly, is show up and do the next right considered action. So maybe if I have a loved one who is struggling and they're not happy and they do legitimately need some of my attention, okay, all right, that makes sense, and I will do what I need to do right by them. But once I have, and I have done the next right considered action and shown up as a good mom or a good partner or whatever, a good friend, then they have to have their feelings and I get to have my experience. And if they continue to be unhappy, I can still be okay in that room. But that is not something that just comes naturally. That's something that has to be looked at and unmasked and honestly dealt with, because the change must come from within you. I've said this before, the human animal is the only animal where our mind, what's going on in our mind, the world that is between our two ears, is more real to us than what's directly in front of us actually happening. And because we're like that, we can perceive the world to be all sorts of different things and ruin our time unless we pause and take a look at what is fueling our thinking. So all of this is really important to look at. So I want to challenge you to finish up with this podcast, sit down with a piece of paper or your computer or your phone or whatever, and type out a list of your self-limiting beliefs. You know, do you think I can't trust myself? I'm inherently unlovable. I'm not self-disciplined. I'm powerless. I'm not strong enough. No one will support or encourage me. Like, you have to look at these things and say, where are they coming from? You know, maybe you weren't supported as a child, so it's really uncomfortable for you to accept and invite in support. But maybe actually, if you look at your life today, you do have a lot of support. But because your self-limiting belief is no one will support or encourage me, you continue to live in that. You know, what if you had the belief, why try? I'll just fail. Well, maybe you did fail a lot as a kid. Maybe it was your fault. Maybe it wasn't your fault. Maybe it was your circumstance. But now you're grown and now you can look at life differently, and it is only possible for you to do so if you realize that that self-limiting belief is actually there. So I think you guys get the point. I don't have to hammer it home to you any harder, but it's really, really important for you to do that. And actually, these can become really good prompts for your journal speak practice, because if you make this list for yourself, you can sit down to one of these self-limiting beliefs each day and put it on the top of the page. And so, like, let's say the belief is, why try? I'll just fail. Well, I mean, immediately, like, if that were my, I could easily put that on my list. I would start with a bunch of different experiences I remember from childhood where I did fail. I failed at a lot of things and I really shamed myself for it. And if I don't look at that, I mean, I have looked at that one quite a bit, quite frankly, because my career doing this work, it involves a ton of rejection. So I have had to learn that one quite a bit the hard way. However, you know, a journal speak practice around these kind of beliefs is a really key way to understand what could be holding you back and what could be motivating you, and et cetera. So do that for yourself. So why am I also talking about self-compassion? Well, the reason I'm talking about self-compassion as well is because I find that when we are living amongst our very old and deeply tread self-limiting beliefs, we tend to really shame ourselves. We tend to speak to ourselves in a way that is way harsher than we would ever speak to a loved one or a friend. You know, so self-compassion, I mean, this is going to seem sort of intuitive, or I hope it seems intuitive, but I really sometimes think it's important to call these sort of obvious things out, because people will just gloss over them if they're not really defined. So self-compassion is treating yourself with the same kindness, care, or tenderness when you are suffering that you would show a dear friend. And even though you might think that's the most obvious thing in the world, I will guarantee right now, if you close your eyes and go inward and think about a recent time where you had a really good friend who was struggling, maybe they had like a big failure or relationship issue or something, and you think about what types of things that you said to them, you know, your tone of voice or your body language. Like, if you think about that experience, if you picture yourself in that situation when you're interacting with a friend who maybe she screwed something up, maybe she said the wrong thing, maybe she got reprimanded at work, maybe she had a relationship failure, and, you know, you're being with her. And if you think about your tone of voice, your body language, how are you with that person? Okay, so just think about that for a second. Now, I want you to think about a time recently where you made a big mistake. You struggled. You tried to do something and you screwed it up. You didn't hit the mark that you wanted to hit. What kind of things would you usually be saying to yourself? What's your tone of voice? What's your body language like? I don't know about you, but I will tell you those two things would be way different for me. I would be so kind to the friend, so patient, so tender. I can just picture my eyes and how soft they would be, and how if we weren't living in Corona land, I would take their hand or hug them. And if I screwed it up, it would be probably a lot of it would be sort of unconscious, meaning like I would just feel terrible. But I know if I was saying anything to myself, it would be, Jesus Christ, Nicole, really? Really? You had to do it like that? Again, had you not learned from last time? You know, or whatever it would look like. Self-compassion is as important as the way you treat other people. In fact, more important. You have to put on your oxygen mask before you assist others. I mean, the thing is that's funny is the truth about self-compassion is it feels the same when we experience it with ourselves as when we experience it toward others, but we just experience it naturally toward others a lot more often. And it's just, we have to recognize that we have to actively work on being compassionate to ourselves because it's a practice. And when we're intentional about it, and when we pause, and when we see ourselves for who we are, we start to naturally have that tenderness that we might show to another person. So the person I like to refer people most often when we talk about self-compassion is Dr. Kristen Neff, N-E-F-F. If you haven't looked at her work, all the stuff I've learned from self-compassion, it comes from studying her work. And so I would definitely recommend if you're looking, I know she has self-compassion meditations. You know, I can't obviously, not everything is everyone's wheelhouse. So what I do is I study the masters. I study the people who are really killing it at different, really important areas, in different areas of self-care. And so if you're looking for more information on self-compassion, Dr. Kristen Neff is a great place to look. So the reason that self-compassion is so important is because we're all living within these self-limiting beliefs. And these self-limiting beliefs are constantly affecting the way we behave. But what I'm asking you to do right now is I'm asking you to call them out. And when you call out a self-limiting belief, it is very possible that your first reaction will be the way we just spoke to ourselves in the example, which is, Jesus Christ, Nicole, you're going to think that again? You're still thinking that? What are you, 10? You know, that kind of nasty, shaming voice, when really it's about pausing and thinking about that suffering friend. And if, like, I had lunch with a very dear friend of mine today, and she was telling me about her life and I was telling her about mine. And when I was listening to her, I just felt so flooded with care and concern and love for her in where she struggles. But I don't feel that way when I think about my own struggles. I mean, not naturally. And it's just so important to make that effort and to try. Because if I'm asking you to call out these self-limiting beliefs, then it is super, super important that you start to develop this self-to-self relationship. So you can step out of yourself and be able to see, wow, you're having a really hard time right now, the way you would for a dear friend. Because these are the things we can do for ourselves when we start to identify our self-limiting beliefs and turn it around to self-affirming beliefs. I mean, that's really the goal in the end. Is, you know, what we all want, freedom, peace, calmness, openness, ease of life. You know, we want to stop fighting our experience, fighting ourselves. We want to openly accept the moment we are in. That's the goal. And so how do we do that? Well, all the things we're talking about. But self-compassion is kind of like a beautiful salve, a band-aid at the end of this hard work. I mean, it's the reason that I tell people to do a loving kindness meditation for 10 minutes after their 20 minutes of journal speak, because it is so important to come back to ourselves and realize this is key. You know, even seriously, sometimes I just put one hand over the other on my heart and I feel the warmth of my hands on one another and the gentle touch of warmth on my body. I like literally do this. And I say, hey, sounds like you're having a really hard time right now. Let's take a minute. You know, that's part of what Dr. Neff talks about when she talks about a self-compassion break. It's really a gesture of common humanity. It's like, it's a gesture of me to myself, but it's also a gesture that I am just like everybody else in that moment who is suffering. And especially during this time of corona and quarantine and vigilance and fear, to just continue to recognize, first of all, you are not alone. Whatever you are feeling, I promise, is being felt by the collective. And being kind to ourselves in these kind of times can remind us that not only is important to be kind to others, to be kind to ourselves, that when we do this, we spread that kind of energy. And I know some of you guys will think I'm going a little bit too hippy-dippy out there, but you know what? I believe in it. I believe in it. I believe energy matters. I truly do. I believe when I sit in my meditation and I call in the connectedness of all people, and I think it fuels my work. So sorry. Okay. I went a little bit overboard there, but it's really how I feel. So yeah, I just felt like that was important to talk about today. I feel like all I want for you guys, all I ever want on this podcast and in all the efforts that I make, is for you to pause, understand that there are some things going on in your life that are not serving you, in your mind, in your perception of the world, that are not serving you. And how can we reverse that? How can we embrace and invite a new experience with the world? And of course, as we invite in that new experience, we eliminate the chronic pain that comes hand in hand with needing to repress so many of the things that we've had to repress for a lifetime. So, you know, guys, listen, this is the hard work. This is the hard and the important work to pause and go back instead of continuing to soldier on through all the pain and all the disappointment and all the unconscious walking around asleep that we've done out of self-protection, so we can forgive ourselves for having come this far, but we can also choose to move forward in a different manner. And uncovering these self-limiting beliefs and coming to a space of self-compassion for ourselves are two really important points in that journey. So I hope that this was helpful for us to spend some time with it today. And if you are enjoying this podcast, if you could just hop over to iTunes and rate and review and subscribe to it, it really does help people find the podcast when they're searching for topics involving their own healing. All right, guys, I send you big love. I hope that this podcast and this day and this time in your life is as gentle and easy as possible. I will tell you that my prayer for you is the same as my prayer for my children and all the people I love. May your lessons be as painless as possible. Our lessons can never be painless, but may they be as painless as possible for you today. This has been The Cure for Chronic Pain with me, Nicole Sachs. I send you big love, and I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.